How do you make it work? This is a pretty big operation.
I just do by the skin of my f-ing teeth. Like, it's realizing that, like, you have to come up with $10,000 to $15,000 a month to run your business. They have to come up with much more. You're still in the same suit. Would you rather be you or would you rather be them? You have no full-time employees. You have no office space. You have no overhead. And so it's like, if I have to be in the primordial soup, I would rather be me, because the real risk right now is...
Oh, welcome back to the Creator Spotlight podcast. Today, we are speaking with Daisy Alioto, who's the CEO, editor, and sometimes writer of Dirt Media, which is a next-generation, newsletter-first entertainment brand covering digital pop culture. Daisy also happens to be my co-host on Tasteland, a podcast where we speak with interesting people from the worlds of culture, media, tech, and business. So this has the distinction of being the Critter Spotlight episode with a guest who I've spoken to by probably 100 times the most before recording this episode. So thank you for doing this, Daisy.
Yeah, I feel like I'm supposed to jump in and say that I'm the co-host, but this is a crossover episode. And, you know, I was thinking as I was getting ready that I didn't consider that you would be researching me as deeply as you research our Tasteland guests. So as...
Well, this was a little different, though.
That is, I mean,
because I already know a good amount about you, so it wasn't like, you know, I didn't have to read your past year of tweets. I did listen to 2 podcasts that you've done recently that were not our own, but it was weird. It was definitely weird. We should talk about what Dirt is, so the listener knows. So, if I was to define it for a friend, I'd say it's like daily-ish pop culture newsletter, cover everything from like how AI slop is ruining the internet to like your favorite television show industry to like, I don't know, like esoteric. You just wrote about grottos and grottos as this concept. And then you're also, there's this collaboration element that's really important. It's like this platform for kind of connecting other kind of like alt culture weird things like Marfa Public Radio, this remote radio station, or like these guys making, you know, bootleg t-shirts. So it's this like pop culture newsletter and kind of like alt pop culture platform. Does that feel accurate for the listener who might not know?
Yeah, I think there was a few things that went into the vision of Dirt. There was, coming off of that Hodinkee experience, this idea that like content, community, and commerce were 3 pillars that would be really important to any future digital media company. And the big question at the time was like, how much of that could happen or be enabled by the blockchain? And then there was this other kind of, you know, nugget of an idea, which was like, what would it mean for media companies to operate more like streetwear companies, or to like emphasize the ways that they sort of already do? And that was the thing that the people who invested in Dirt, who were largely investing out of crypto and Web3 focused funds, got the most excited about, because there is an element of building a community that wants to collect and represent your brand that can apply to digital collectibles.
Yeah.
At the time, AI was not really a big part of the conversation, which seems crazy, because AI and autonomous AI agents and is such a big part of the conversation in technology right now. Yeah. And also like the emphasis on NFTs at the time and NFT artwork has really, at the current moment, although it toggles back and forth, switched to meme coins.
Wait. Something I want to stop on here. So, yeah. So something you said on the Context Pod that I was listening to earlier was, what if we stop thinking about people as subscribers and we start thinking about them as collectors? And you were talking about like, if we get somebody to buy a $30 hat and then...
Well, that's really smart. I can't believe I said that.
I can't believe you said that. There might be like a subscription to Dirt included in it, and that you'd seen a lot of like growth in revenue around these limited collaborations. And now we're really getting to this like these streetwear drop ideas. And then this idea of like collecting the limited edition thing, whether that's that like the NFT or it's like a physical hat or whatever. But then how that includes the subscription to the media, which, you know, then they're on the newsletter and then they're like, oh, here's the next limited collaboration thing I want. And then they're just kind of like in this ecosystem of collecting and like participating in this publication through the collections, which to me like felt novel.
I think that it is it's a new and an old idea. Like that was really what came out in our Tasteland conversation with the representatives from three different worker-owned media collectives who were talking about converting people, which is like, they're dealing with the same thing and everyone's sort of trying to solve this problem of like, you know, you can spin your wheels and be like, why aren't more people buying subscriptions? Maybe we need to email them more. Maybe we need to discount them more. Or you could put energy into figuring out what they will buy.
What they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe what they will buy is like access to a chat with Drew McGarry or, you know, whatever, but, or two baseball caps.
Yeah.
But being in, see, now I'm getting off track.
So. Or you're having like an event, like I saw like Hellgate. Yes. I'm a Hellgate subscriber, right? And I a 404 Media subscriber. I didn't go to either of these events, but they had their like holiday parties. It was like free for subscribers or like $30 if you're not subscribed. And it's like, well, at that point, I should probably just subscribe and then I'll go to the party. And it's like only a little bit more money and I get to go to the party and I get a year's worth of their stuff. Like,
yeah, like duh. But if their marketing to you had been like, stop buying matcha.
Yeah.
For one day a month.
And what, what everybody this
inside
uses,
you would be like, go away.
Every newsletter is like, you know, it's only the cost of one beer per month. It's like, and it's like, well, okay.
That's my beer.
Yeah, exactly.
People don't think of it as coming out of the same pot. You have to figure out what they value. And like, nobody wants to be running like eight different strategies at the same time. But like, you know, what we're really talking about is like e-commerce and events and like, what is the segment of people who convert along those? But so I'm getting like a little bit off track, but
that's okay. What, so like how does the rest of the business work? Like you have, this is like subscription revenue. There's advertising revenue, these collaborations. Like how do you make this work? Like we were talking earlier about like how you've always been at the, like right at the center of marketing, the commerce and the editorial. You're also like, I should say, this isn't like a creator driven newsletter where it's like just you publishing your opinion every day. You do publish a decent amount of your own work, but it's like it's mostly other writers. I think you pay like 50 cents a word. It costs a good amount to produce this newsletter. This is not like a, and you know, it's all edited, blah blah blah,
allegedly.
how do you make it work? It's like, this is a pretty big operation.
Well, so glad you asked. This is where it comes back to the primordial soup. So primordial soup is like my new pet thing, and this relates to what I was talking about before, which is like, Twitter is like throttling links, like Facebook, who knows what the heck. Instagram, great, you can build a large following there, but it's hard to direct them to like text-based content on other platforms.
Yeah.
Blue Sky, like nobody knows if they're supposed to be doing it. So like, I'm like, okay, that's the primordial soup. That is when you're in a time period where nobody really knows what to do. Pivot to video, pivot to podcast, run eight different social accounts that have like a decreasing return on investment. And I was kind of giving a pep talk to somebody who's in a similarly sized media business the other day, which is like, I think I was just walking him through what I've arrived at for myself to cope. Because you're like, how do you make it work? And I'm just like, I just do by the skin of my fucking teeth. Like, it's realizing that like, you are in this primordial soup. Condé Nast is in this primordial soup. Hearst is in the primordial soup. You have to come up with $10,000 to $15,000 a month to run your business.
Yeah.
They have to come up with much more. You're still in the same soup. Would you rather be you or would you rather be them? It's like you have no full-time employees. You have no office space. You have no overhead. You have no, well, you might have like some, you might work with a printer, but you're not printing a print product on a cadence that you're locked into. And so it's like, if I have to be in the primordial soup, I would rather be me, because the real risk right now is evolving in the wrong direction too quickly. Like, you don't want to evolve out of the soup into a creature that does not reflect where things are going.
This is a great metaphor.
And the game right now is to survive in the soup as long as possible. You just have to survive, stay in the soup, and it will become clear what you need to be. And you can even like evolve and devolve. You can try.
I think
things.
It's like you have to, you wait. It's like, you know, to get on the primordial soup pre-evolution thing, it's like there's the volcanoes making the island and the ocean. And it's like maybe your island hasn't been formed yet. You know, like you want to wait to crawl onto land until you see the right land.
I'm just like, you are dealing with all of the same problems as these established media brands. You have a lot fewer resources, but you also have to come up with much less in order to survive and stay afloat. And like, so it's almost like, what are you complaining about? Wouldn't you rather be you than them? Like, you're so agile.
This also goes back to like the, you know, the age of like the SEO and scale being kind of over. And it's like, you just have to like find your niche group. You don't have to look for like a million people audience. Like, that's just for 99.9% of people trying to like put content out on the internet. You don't want a million. There's no world in which you're going to get an audience of a million. Mm-hmm.
You could you around a certain tent pole, but it's but probably not going to be your core.
The vast majority of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, I mean, I talk about Dirt as a publisher. I talk about Dirt as a Condé Nast of newsletters. I represent us in a very big way because we have a big vision, but that vision can be executed by quite simply just finding enough money every month. And that is like, that's kind of all a startup is. It's not very like glamorous, but I've chosen that rather than being a solo operator where I would have like made a six-figure salary just to myself this year, because I want to be a publisher and I want to be closer to a magazine, which is something you and I have also talked about, which is a container for taste that contains a lot of different perspectives with an editorial purview set by a few like lead voices and tastemakers. That's really what I'm interested in. And I'm interested in like all the different ways that that can be supplemented, organized, like, I don't know, like underscored by like new technology or like response to it.
Well, wait, one thing I've been wanting to get you to respond to is like, you kind of already are. It's like, what's the difference between Dirt, which is, you know, this, it's multiple things, but it's a newsletter first thing. That's how probably most people experience it, is it lands in their inbox and then they read the article, they click through, maybe they read it on the website, right? But then there's like a Garbage Day or a Perfectly Imperfect or a Feed Me, which are also all kind of like, all these are all different things, but they're all like culture related newsletters that come out multiple times per week. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, mm-hmm. so it's like an obvious question, but it sounds like the answer you're saying is like the crucial difference between Dirt, which is, you know, they're all newsletters, they're all in the primordial soup of newsletters, and like are like smaller, they're not Vogue or whatever. Right. The difference is that you are making this magazine that's like, it's not you, it's not, like, it's your taste, but it's like you are behind the scenes as the editor and you're not the face. Is that the difference between you and like these other things, between Dirt and like a Garbage Day, Perfectly Imperfect, or Feed Me? What is the crucial difference?
I don't want to speak for like Tyler or Emily or Ryan, but I think the real difference is probably, like, to reframe the question a little bit, what's most likely to be the secret third thing? Like, this is something that we talked about with the worker-owned media collectives, which is like, okay, everyone's doing subscription and advertising revenue, some hybrid. That's true for Ryan. That's true for Emily. That's true for Tyler. Then there's like the secret third thing. For Dirt, it's the sort of like operating like a streetwear company. Plus, like, we are developing some amount of proprietary technology. Like, the stack of our website is not, each of the pieces of it are not proprietary, but this idea of like, you hit this like blobby paywall, you create an account, you purchase a subscription that's represented by artwork. That's a novel application of the technology. For Tyler, it's definitely having his own social network. For Emily, it's probably not having her own social network. It's probably taking the Substack comment section, not necessarily in the short term trying to replace that with her own network, but monetizing it into like a paid book club or paid events. For Ryan, it could be like a conference or event series, but probably not going to be proprietary technology.
I love how you've responded to this. So basically you're saying it's like, these are all things that have started as newsletters, but they kind of like, they're all evolving out of the primordial soup into like this different thing that's defined by like the creator, the creator's point of view, and like how the creator has like developed the audience that the person behind it has developed, and how they relate to that audience and how that audience relates to them. It's like the difference is just like somewhere along the way, the primordial soup bubbled up something different and like you took that separate path.
Yeah, I think like you talk to Ryan recently. Mm-hmm. Ryan was a really early angel investor in Dirt, and he is one of our advisors. He's like a newsletter network. Well, you could say it's like a bundling example of bundling across different B2B categories. And he's using that newsletter network to identify needs for
Adam Ryan, you're saying, not Ryan. Adam Ryan. Broderick.
Yeah. Sorry. Did I say Ryan? Not
you
Adam.
Said Ryan. Yeah. It's okay. I was tweeting his name the other day and I wrote Ryan instead of Adam. So.
Oh my God. Please don't tell him. So you interviewed Ryan recently and you're like, so he's like using the newsletter to identify like within these B2B categories, like, is there a need for some sort of like new HR software? Do we need different, like, is there like some sort of like healthcare professional, like network series that you pay into and has like a shared group
He's
chat.
Building these like mini social networks for these professions and like using these newsletters to
or build software like, products.
Yeah.
Like not deep tech, but, that's like what he's doing, you know, in this B2B space. So like Dirt, right now, we only represent a roll-up of two newsletters, Dirt and Prune, but can do a similar thing, but around like business to consumer rather than like business to business. So what would it mean to identify different consumer needs through the newsletter and serve them, whether they're like technical or around like a specific product? And I'm interested in like tools that can deepen the relationship between a subscriber and publication. So that's sort of what I focused on. But that's just like, that's sort of like a parallel track to the streetwear style drops that we do. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I want to talk about the audience though for a second. We've gone far without talking about them. So who is the Dirt reader? One, mm-hmm. I know that in the New York Times piece from this summer.
Oh, were we in the New York Times?
Yeah, you were in the New York Times, in case you forgot. Great article.
Well, that's the other thing about like being a young media company. Mm-hmm. It's like people think we're a lot bigger and we have more resources than we do. And I'm like,
and then being in the New York Times makes you look bigger than you are.
Right. But you can like, it's like you can run something on a shoestring, but if you're smart, it's like you're going to be hearing about me everywhere. You're going to be sick of hearing about Dirt. And you don't need to be making millions of dollars a year to like get to that point. Like this is like, it's brute force. Cultural capital accrual, and which is the only thing that's actually going to be monetizable.
Yeah.
Taste, right? Taste. In the taste economy, which I like have also avoided bringing up because I just am sick of talking about it, which is stupid because it's like
you flogged it over many, many hours.
I know. Just go to the YouTube link.
Well, wait.
Go to the YouTube link and report the guy that wrote Insufferable because the comment keeps disappearing and reappearing.
On the FWB.
Yeah.
But okay. So my audience, 30 to 40,000 or so, you'd said this summer. Who are these people? Who is the Dirt reader and how have they come to Dirt? How have you developed the audience?
My description of a Dirt reader, which is like maybe this isn't as specific as you're asking. I can get more into specifics, but it's like, the person who works in technology that wants to be seen as more culturally advanced than other people that work in technology, and the person that works in culture that wants to be seen as more technology fluent than other people that work in culture. And everyone is sort of sitting at the center of this Venn diagram where it's like, okay, we're translating things in technology for people who are kind of tipped more into the world of culture, and we're translating culture for people that are tipped more into the world of technology. That's like my very, very broad description of like the ideal Dirt reader. We have done surveys, and so we know like technology, media, and like academia and the arts are just like our top fields. But I don't know a lot of other newsletters that are read by like VCs and people who have DIY lit mags. I just don't. Yeah.
Well, it's an exciting description. It like makes you feel like you're included. It makes you feel like you're in on the conversation no matter which side of it you're coming from, which is really clever.
Yeah. And like some people go really hard on like marketing media through exclusivity, where it's like we would talk about like who Dirt isn't for. But I've never felt a need to do that. And like one thing I talked about with Paul when he was writing the Styles piece is like I've never felt any need to position Dirt as like an enfant terrible. I understand why people do that. I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, for example, The Drift, like they burst on the scene and they were just like, N+1 had their moment. You're old. Like, now you have us. And that makes a lot of sense. But for me, I think if I compare Dirt to anything that came before, I would actually be limiting what we could be. Because what we really want to be is something nobody's ever seen before. And you can't do that if you're just trying to get attention in the short term, which comes back to like the monoculture start a war thing Nick Suzy wrote that we referenced yesterday. Like, that's awesome for short term bursts of attention. Like, if we came on the scene and we're just like, our whole thing is going to be like beefing with GQ, sure, fine. But at a certain point, you have to say, you can't define yourself in opposition to others. You have to say what you are, what you offer. You have to be very future focused, which I think came through in the Styles piece. And for better or worse, like, being future focused right now has to include some theory of media and some theory of technology. And I like really try to be generous to with my time and talk to other people who might want to start something like Dirt or turn like their current newsletter into more of like a solo media business. But I get frustrated with the amount of people who have no theory of the future of media and no theory of technology other than AI bad.
And well, this goes back to like what we grow keep talking up. About like you understanding the business side of it too. And it's like the future of media can't just be like writing a good article. That's always at the core of it,
yeah.
Right? Making something really good. But that's like you need the vessel to put that in and well, get and it like, out there.
What I loved about that conversation we had with Max and Sam and Jasper, who represent like 404 Defector and Hellgate, is like they are grownups. Like because to me, they are people who have like understood and moved past this idea of needing to understand the business side of things.
Like, very pragmatic. They have ideals and they like Jasper operate from a place of idealism, but they're very pragmatic.
Jasper especially. And I actually think that that is the number one thing that makes a difference in what succeeds and fails. Does not make a difference, and for how long. It does not make a difference in what's interesting. And I want to be very clear about that. I think there should always be time and space for interesting experiments in media and art that do not make money, will not exist for a long time, and cannot survive. Period. And that's like, that is a slide in the Taste Economy presentation, which is like, is this a business or not? Decide now, because once you enter the cloudosphere, people will have certain expectations of you. I love that stuff. I encourage it as much as possible. I've written for publications like that where I'm just like, Lord knows if this will be around in 8 months, but I'm so glad it's around now. That is like, I really want to make it clear that that's valid. My issue is like the context collapse between the two. The idea that the outcomes could be similar. And I think you only really have a chance at like longevity once you cross the threshold that these guys have crossed, which is like the business side, the pragmatism, the thinking about new business models, the enacting new business models, and not just sitting on Twitter and talking about it and being like, somebody should make this. Okay, do it.
But like in doing it and trying to figure it out, yeah. Because I think the one thing that is really compelling about them is they all kind of like just started doing it and like, there's got to be a way we can do this. And then they work with each other to figure it out. And like Defector was first. So like, they have given so much advice to all these other people. And it's like, yeah, you just start doing, it's kind of what you're saying a little bit ago about like, how do you make Dirt work? You make it work every month, 1 month at a time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all you can do. You want to have your vision of like what I want this to be in 5 years, whatever, but you have to realize that that's like a castle in the sky and you have to build, you know, the stairway up there. And maybe you'll never get to that castle, but you'll get to some other castle. You'll get to your whatever, your island of the primordial soup.
So incremental.
Yeah.
And it includes just a lot of insane bullshit. Like, you know, filing like everyone's 1099s and whatever, running payroll and this and that. Like, if you're not willing to do that, you don't get to have a media company. Sorry. Yeah. Like, you can have your Substack and that's really nice for you. But people are not going to talk about you in the same way that they talk about people who have just sat their ass in the soup, and yeah. That's okay. Like, it's a really big tent. There's room for like a lot of different models.
Mm-hmm. It's a really big bowl of soup. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like how many metaphors can we throw in here?
So many.
There's an animal cracker. Yeah. Like
I love mixing metaphors. Okay, I want to talk about the collaborations though, because this is something you're really good at, and this really goes back to the streetwear thing and the collectibles, etc. So you do a lot of them. The most recent one that came out, I think, as we record this, was the Marfa Public Radio tote bag. A little bit before that, there was the editorial series with Cake Scene. I think there was an event involved in that too, and then also the the t-shirts with Night Gallery. These are all things where you're like collaborating with other people doing really, Marfa Public Radio is a different thing. That's kind of like a public radio station that's been around for a while, but you're collaborating with other people doing interesting things on generally a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And you're like weaving together this kind of like alternative cultural bulwark. Bulwark's not the right word.
Bulwark? It's like
raft. This raft.
God, I don't know if I've heard it. A raft
of the soup.
That.
Oh my God, a raft of the soup. There you go.
Okay.
I think too, like you're talking about all the 1099s you have to do, et cetera. And like when you really prioritize like bringing in writers who maybe haven't written a lot elsewhere, you're more interested in their ideas, whatever. Mm-hmm. Where am I getting with this? Where am I getting this?
We're running out the clock. We have 10 minutes left.
Maybe we'll go a little over. I'm really interested in how you think about collaborations, and like these are such an important part of what you do. I don't know. For the listener listening, I want them to like, I want people to do more collaborations, to like not do things solo, to like not just have your newsletter and write it yourself, whatever. I like it when people work with other people and make new interesting things. So how do you make these things happen? How did they come about?
I love working with other small like startups or media entities or like artistic entities, because like it's like really selfish, because I'm like, okay, exposes us to their audience and them to ours, great. But it's also like there's so few stakeholders. Like that t-shirt was like, I texted Josh and was like, can we do a shirt together? And I've become like spoiled for that, because I'm like, when I do reach out to a larger organization and try to collaborate with them, and like there's 12 people on the email thread, I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm out. Like there's just, at a certain point, it becomes worth your time, because like when you see that through start to finish with all of the stakeholders, they run it up the tent pole, it happens, you make money. But it's also just like such an annoying way to do business when you've been me for the last couple years, just waking up and being like, I want to make a perfume. And you start to gravitate towards the people that are receptive to that. Like the people that say yes, the people that are like focused on this is how we would do it. Not like, what if this, what if this, what if this? Who cares? Like Cab, who we had on Tasteland, who co-founded Arena, literally like messaged me as I was like coming to my computer to record this, being like, I wish people brought us more ideas. Like you came in so strong. I literally like messaged him and Meg and was like, I want to do a collaboration, an editorial series about scent and memory. Maybe we release a perfume. Like, what do you think? Like,
what if?
And they're yes people. They're yes people. And they were like, I wish more people would bring us stuff like this. You don't really know who's a yes person until you approach them. Some people are like a lot more neurotic than they present themselves online. It's like, well, now I know. But it's great. And the thing is, like, at the end of the day, also, like, to me, these are advertisements to larger companies, to the place with more stakeholders that like hopefully won't make my life miserable. That like this is the type of stuff that you could do with us. Like I see it as like building a portfolio of things where it's like for people who lack the imagination to come up with what they would do with dirt, it's like, look at the list. You could do a tote bag, you could do a shirt, you could do a perfume, you could do a digital fashion garment, and you could do a zine, you could do an audio series. Now you pick off the menu, because you're the type of person that has to have a menu. But like the great joy of my life, and I will have to outgrow it at some point, because you know, these do represent larger opportunities for us to make money, even beyond like make more money than we make off of subscriptions, to be honest, is like I will have to work more and more with people who have to be presented the menu. But I've really loved this and I don't want to stop. I want to keep going, and I already know what our first collaboration of 2025 will be.
So your dream is that like this is like this is like the streetwear brand idea, not like literally streetwear, but like that this is something where you're just like creating these new things, bringing in these like limited edition objects into the world that like are ephemeral and that there's only 100 of them or whatever. Like that's what you are interested in making more.
And
than,
I think
like,
that's what people want.
Yeah.
Somebody messaged me yesterday and asked if there was more of the Dirt perfume. And I said, no, this is my longtime reader. And but I don't think I even know their name. I know their like Twitter handle. And I was like, no, there's not. And I think he it's like, I'm doing stocking stuffers for, I assume, wife.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, you can get like really great perfume samples from a lot of these companies. I'm going to tell you my favorites, like Dias and Durga and Atal Libre Durange. And he came back and was like, I just ordered the Dias and Durga sampler pack for her.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's sick to be able to have like interactions like that.
Wait. So I really like, I want to ask you a question within this. So like, I used to always ask people when they came on Curtis Wally Pod, and I stopped because the answers weren't always that exciting. But like, what do you think your responsibility is as the editor CEO of Dirt? Like, whether it's to your audience, to people like Walden, like who like contribute to it, like what is your responsibility to like to other people, to the people who like interact with Dirt?
I'm laughing because I feel like you saw like my therapy tweets this week, and this is like kind of the business equivalent of that question. It's like, I really believe that we owe each other everything. Yes. I hate the trend in culture right now that's like, you don't owe anyone anything,
like, it's so just like individualist, like everyone for themselves, like
maximizing your own happiness under the guise of wellness and self-actualization. I've been self-actualized since I was 10. So like, what I'm going to do is like, I'm going to do the most that I can do in the world creatively.
You should tweet that, by the way.
maybe I'll skeet it. Like, to do the most good that I can do in the category that interests me, which is like not saving the world. It's media with, and doing like the least harm, whether that's like, you know, if a freelancer emails me, I have 30 days to pay them. If a freelancer emails me the day after their piece is filed and asks, when are they getting paid? I know. Okay. I'm like, I'm not like, I have 30 days to pay you. Like, your piece just ran, like, go away. I'm like, this person needs the money.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to make them say that. I'm not going to make them like come to
me between the lines
and humiliate themselves. I'm running your payment this week. No questions asked. Like, all of that stuff adds up. But and yeah, and it's also just like, make the world a more special place. I had a check-in with my interns this morning. Like, our internship is so unstructured. I'm literally like texting them, and I was like, look, you guys, this is a very unstructured internship. You're in finals. Like, you're getting class credit. You're not getting paid. Like, what I can do for you is get you clips and write you a recommendation letter.
Yeah.
That's what I could do for
you. Which is huge.
And if I'm texting you at a weird time and I'm pissing you off, tell me. If you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing, tell me. If you're not having a good time, tell me. Like, period.
Stand up for yourself. And that's like, part of what you get for this internship.
You know what I mean? This isn't like the type of thing where you're going to come in and like go into the fashion closet and get like yelled at by like a 50-year-old gay man. Sorry. Like, this is what it is. And the other thing is like, I get a lot of letters for people that are going through the immigration process to get like, I think the O-1.
Oh, the
visa. And they want to, they're like, okay, they're so, it's a nightmare experience. And everyone is like so apologetic. They're like, my lawyer's going to send you a letter that basically makes it sound like I was like Dirt star
like,
writer.
Obviously,
and
I'll
my
help
like
you.
Talent is like uncomparable. Yeah. And I was like, why are you apologizing? Send me the fucking letter. I'll sign it. Like, no question. I'm not even going to read it. Like, sign. Like, because like, I can, right? Like, why? Who would ever say no
to
that? Why
would you withhold that?
Yeah, why would you withhold? I'm like, great. Like, God, I hope I can be a nexus in you, like, getting to stay in the city that you love and a country that you want to live in to do the thing that you want to do. Like, never apologize for that, you know? So it's, like, all the little things. It's not, like, anything major. It's just, like, actually being in a position to, like, not only, like, do no harm, but also, like, lift people up. Give them their first byline. help them have a positive experience after being laid off from another media company, you know, be the person who's like, your value, you have value, your work has value.
One thing, wait, so I'm not going to ask you this question. We don't need to linger on it too long, but this, like, I always ask people, like, what is a creator? What does that mean? And one of the definitions I've liked that I don't know if we've talked about elsewhere is, this is like one of the most broad umbrella ones. It's like somebody who contributes to the corpus of the internet. And I've really gotten stuck on that one because it to me like implies that responsibility that the internet is something that like we being like people, whether it's like you're a company making an app that people are using, or you're like somebody making a post on an app, or even if you're somebody liking a post, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we're all just like contributing to this thing and like shaping it and, you know, throwing little pads of clay on it here and there and scraping some off there. I don't know. I think that's one thing I like about Dirt and your approach is that like you have that kind of principled take where it's like you want to make the thing good and not the filler, not the slop.
Yeah. I mean, I think being a creator requires like having something to say. And I actually think like being a contributor to the corpus of the internet doesn't actually guarantee that you do have something to say.
No, that's like too broad.
Yeah. Like there's a process of creation and a lot of things enter the internet without having gone through that process. They don't exist and then they exist, but it doesn't really mean that they were created, if that makes sense.
No, but I think it's like you are contributing to that corpus, whether like you're doing so thoughtfully or not. And so I think it's like the idea is that like you should be thoughtful about it. And like, you know, far be it, like I've tweeted so many stupid, worthless tweets that I've then gone on to delete that didn't need to be contributed to the corpus. But I think
it's like it goes beyond like recognizing other people's interiority. Like it's also like having a theory of your own work.
Yeah.
Like I've talked about how annoying it is when people don't have a theory of the future, but they think they're going to start something.
Yeah.
Even worse is like they have no theory of themselves, their own creation, what they have to offer, what they want to say, what's important to them, what they value, and why do it. Like, yeah, you can growth hack a newsletter and sell it and never have asked yourself any of those questions. And to me, I'm like, go do anything else. You will probably make more money. Go be Gary Vee and drive around to yard sales and look for like rare Beanie Babies. Because like there's adults are talking here. Like,
I think we'll end it right there.
Okay.
So
I knew you were gonna do that to me or force me into some sort of like kicker.
Well, why not? Go why to dirt.fyi, subscribe, read it. It's good. Listen to Tasteland. Anything else?
No.
Cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye. I'll see you next week.